please do support us on Patreon. This is 100% volunteer and listener supported initiative. So your help will make sure that we keep going. Okay. So I think at the moment we're happy to introduce our featured Ukrainian today. Rissana, can you let us know if you can hear us and you're with us? Just unmute yourself.
Hello.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Hey.
Yes.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
Slava Ukraini.
Heroam slava.
Rissana, we have, I'm so excited to have you here because, a big disclaimer, Rissana, one of my closest and oldest friends, but also we're excited because of all the stuff that she has achieved and is doing at the moment. But we have this golden rule that we never introduce our featured Ukrainians and allow them to introduce themselves the way they want. So please, would you mind sharing a bit with everyone else who you are, where you come from, and what your life has been in the last 3 months?
Yes, I am originally from Lviv, but I lived most of my adult life in Kyiv. And 8 years ago, I moved to Spain for a multitude of reasons, mostly for the sun and the sea. And I have been living here, enjoying my life, building a business, helping people to move to this lovely place. And then on the 24th of February, I woke up to terrifying, horrific news, and my life has been completely different since then. I am a biracial queer Ukrainian, and I'm 42, if that matters at all. And thank you for having me.
Rissana, we made friends even before you moved, but we still kept sharing quite the similar fate. I mean, like, as fellow Ukrainians, fellow queer Ukrainians, but also as fellow migrants, because I also moved out of Ukraine some not very long after you. But I was really like wondering if you also feel the same about our kind of, let's just say, Ukrainian migrant community in recent 3 months. Because when we moved out of Ukraine for very various reasons, but obviously not because we had the most comfortable lives. However, one thing that really keeps me going these days that I see so many Ukrainians outside Ukraine, and where tens, you know, at least 10 million or 15 million, that they're all working 24/7 for Ukraine, and I've never seen that before in my whole life. So, I mean, is it something that you see around yourself as well? If you're in contact with Ukrainians in Spain, would you agree that this is something unprecedented? You would feel as well?
It's absolutely amazing and astounding. We are pretty far from Ukraine, like geographically speaking. And as soon as we received the news, like, I did not have too many Ukrainians in my immediate circle. Like, I have friends here and there, but I've never actively seeked out the diaspora. But people just got organized within a day, literally within a day. We had a WhatsApp group. We had things that people were helping, figuring out what to do, what to send to Ukraine, how we can, you know, get equipment, how can we get food, how can we get humanitarian aid. And over these 3 months, this has grown and matured, and it's amazing to experience and see. Like, first we were running around like, you know, chickens with our heads cut off, running and looking, what can we do, what should we do, where do we get help? And at this point we have a help for refugees. There is a group by Plus Ukraine that is collecting humanitarian aid in industrial scope. They're sending trucks of aid every week. We have people who help with accommodations. We have groups of people who help with search for jobs and documents and everything. It's like the comparison of us with honeybees is exactly that. We were woken, we flew around trying to figure out what we do. And once everybody found their lane, we are busy there and we interact when we need. Like yesterday, I had to call Plast and tell them that we have medication for them and diapers that need to go to Ukraine because we don't need them in the center. And these things like happen. Otherwise, everybody knows what they're doing and we're doing our own thing. And even more to that, like we open a center for refugees to give them food and clothes in Valencia because there are thousands of people who do not really receive any support from the government, unfortunately, in that regard. Our team are the refugees themselves. We had people who came in on the first day that we opened and they were like, oh, great, we want to help. And now it's been 3 months in, they come in for every shift and we're open four days a week. They come in, they help, they work for hours, they support other refugees. And it is astounding and reassuring and amazing to see.
Our next question was actually going to be to you about the community centers, because we've been looking and following your work as well, and it's been amazing to see for you to talk a little bit more about it, but you've just answered our question. But perhaps you could tell us a little bit about maybe some of the sort of challenges that you've experienced, but also some of the forces that have kept you going over the past 3 months in keeping this community center going and supporting Ukrainians.
I mean, the challenge is one, as any probably volunteer organization, is finances, is like shaking people and making sure that we get support, that we get the money that we need to keep our doors open. But even when we are at the lowest point because we're exhausted and it's so hard, it's a lot of work. You see the people that come, you see the children that come, and you know that ultimately it's, for a lot of people, it's the only place where they get food, where they get to speak to somebody, where they get a little bit of their dignity and choice back. And that's what keeps us pushing through. That is literally it.
That's amazing. That is genuinely amazing to hear.
But you know what also kind of fantastic for me to hear that, and I also experienced it in myself, that despite, like, we never had a single thought, we never given a single thought to this task whatsoever. Like, when everything started, it was almost like instinctively the thing to do. And it reminds me a bit of the same situation during the Maidan Revolution, when so many people rushed to organize and to help and to participate without even sometimes the knowledge how to do it. And now, you know, Rissana, you tell me about how you quickly organized and got it running, despite that you're not really, you know, a civil society, humanitarian organization. But it's almost like it is on an instinctive level for Ukrainians to organize in times of really crisis like this, right?
Yeah, I honestly, the things that come out like in my mind sometimes, I'm like, wow, where was all of this sleeping? Like, where these things that make me feel the way I feel about Ukraine, about the people, where was this my whole life? Like, don't get me wrong, I love Ukraine and I always did, but I never had this heartbreaking, overpowering emotion where I'm like, I need to go back, or I need to at least make sure that people that are here are helped. And I cannot, there's no second thought or like, should I or should I not? No, there was like, this is what I'm doing because this is something I'm definitely decent at. And nobody else is doing it. So here I am, and I told my partner that this is what we're doing, and he was like, okay.
Look, I wanted to also ask you about what is happening around you, because as we know, there are approximately 110,000 Ukrainians that Spain accepted, Ukrainian refugees. And you mentioned that, of course, all Ukrainians in Spain, or the majority, already those who were living there, are now helping refugees, making sure that they have stuff to survive. But there are also kind of a local community support, or do locals help in if yes, in what way?
Yes. So the way, one of the reasons why it was so easy for us to start the center is because we are really well integrated in the expat community. Most of them are really immigrants, but they love the word expat. So it's the nature of the work, and it's the nature of my partner being from the US. We know a lot of people. And what I found out, and that is something absolutely amazing to me, is that once you give people the avenue to help, they are really happy to do it. So what happened, we started a group on Facebook, Help Ukraine Valencia. By now we have over 1,000 people in it, but we just organized the group. We let people know that there's a group. And this is where we organized all this expat community. And there are people who organize the Spanish community the same way as we did with the expats. We share the information, we call for help, we call for requests, and we remind them that we need money. And all of this is being run 100% financially from expats and Spaniards. Ukrainians help us, but they do not sustain us financially. The community of expats and Spaniards are the people who foot the bill for what we are doing. And Spaniards are amazing. As soon as the refugees started arriving, people opened their homes, they took them in, they offered their help, they offered their support, they bring things to the community center as well. They share their clothes, they share their toys, and it's absolutely amazing to see. Yes, there is certain set of fatigue, or maybe it's not as much as fatigue as less urgency, because when the war started, it was like, oh my God, what is happening? How can we help? It's urgent. Now there are paths, there are ways, there's systems in a way, so there's less urgency. But whenever we put out a call and we say, like, I'm sorry, we are down to our last 100 euros, please help us to keep on doing what we're doing, we receive money in the next 2-3 days, because I think it's part of human nature to be under the urgency a little bit. People like, oh, I was thinking about helping, now is a good moment to do so. And the community is amazing. I knew that where I'm living, which is Valencia, Spain, is fantastic, but now it's a whole different level, because so many people open their homes, hearts, and wallets that it's astounding. It's truly astounding.
Yeah. It sounds incredible in terms of how people have mobilized to support you and Ukrainians in general, but I guess a lot of people still have this like misconception that, you know, Ukrainians are getting red carpet treatment everywhere across the board, including by governments. And I was just wondering, has the government been stepping up the same way that people have been stepping up in Spain? And if they haven't been, what do you think they can do better?
I love Spain, and I don't want to speak poorly about it, but it has, you know, every country has its things. So Spain rolled out a easy procedure for people to get legalized and get their papers in order so that people can look for work. And I appreciate that, because for Spain, I, as a person who deals with bureaucracy, I know how hard that must have been to do that as fast as they did. Unfortunately, the rest of the help was left to like regional governments, and that is a hit and miss between provinces and towns. Where we are, there is no financial support on the government level at all. There are no money that are being given. They're like, people are basically left on their own. That's why providing food is of such crucial importance. A lot of governmental funding was given to organizations like Red Cross. And unfortunately, while they help, they mostly help people with accommodation. So there's, again, no stipends, no food, no anything, to a point where last week, Red Cross people came to our center, looked around, and starting from this week, we have people who come to us and tell us that Red Cross sent them here. And that is this is infuriating and so sad for me, because our budget is, I don't know, 3,000 euro a month, and there is Red Cross who is sending people to us.
No, I mean, God, I would love to say that this is something shocking and never happened before, but I've heard so many similar stories from Ukrainian volunteers in other European countries that by now I'm just infuriated, because the International Red Cross gets hundreds of millions of donations for Ukraine. And unfortunately, as we said probably on this third or second conversation in the Ukrainian spaces about the help that Ukraine gets, like if you want to help Ukraine and Ukrainians, find a local grassroots Ukrainian initiatives or just Ukrainians, you know, and donate there, because this is where 100% of impact will be happening. That's for sure. Rusana, I wanted to ask you about the Ukrainian refugees in Spain that you help and that come to Spain. Of course, the majority of them are women and kids, but what are the things that you would love to highlight for everyone else about who they are and how what are their plans there? Because, you know, unfortunately, we cannot ignore the reality that there is a lot of specifically organized disinformation targeting Ukrainian refugees, including, as I understand, in Spain, a lot of fakes, you know, misconceptions. So there are some that you would love to address based on your real life experience working with them, what those would be.
You know, the most amazing thing about the people that come to the center is that, and the people that I see online, and like there are a lot of communities now, Facebook groups trying to help people, is that majority of people who come want to go back as soon as they come. And we had quite a big exodus actually in the middle end of May. Like we had several families of our volunteers go back, and I know that there were quite a lot of buses full of people who went back. We even have people from Mariupol who want to go back. You know what I mean? Like there's so many people who cannot wait to go back home, even if there is no home to go back to, which is unbelievably heartbreaking. But also people who are staying, at least for now, are staying put. They are learning the language, they're looking for work, they are not sitting around and waiting for the world to help them more than they absolutely need. They are looking for work, if it's a cleaning your yard for 3 hours and getting paid, or it's a full-time job by their specialty. People care about being independent, taking care of themselves and their families, and they are super hardworking, and they are looking for opportunities and possibilities to take care of themselves and not need help. And also, they're all so sweet, kind, and polite. And I know that I cannot like, you know, bunch people like that together, because everybody's different and there are rude people everywhere. You can't be like, I can't say there are no rude Ukrainians. But like people that I encounter, they have seen so much heartbreak and hardship that they are just trying to do better.
Yeah. And, you know, actually, I think now we have as well, before we used to say like, oh, majority, like a lot of people want to go back. I think there are now like official statistics for how many people have gone back. And it just goes to show that like, it's not just talk. A lot of people are going back to Ukraine who have escaped and who spent some time in Europe, but now are going home to see their loved ones. And I think something that a lot of people keep forgetting is that, you know, men up until the age of 60 are not able to leave the country. So a lot of people are going back to see their families and see them again. And it's just worth reminding everyone. I actually had a slightly to change gear here, a different question to you, which is one of our favorite questions, as always, at this podcast. And we've been covering a lot Western audiences, English-speaking audiences, but we haven't really spoken about, I think we've spoken about Italy and Ireland. But in terms of Spain, has there been anything that's been frustrating in you in how the media has been covering Ukraine and what's been happening in the war? And is there anything you want to, I don't really like the word call out, but is there any sort of things that have been frustrating in how people and the media have been covering the war that you would like to sort of question?
I'm not well equipped to talk about media broadly. What I do want to say is that, as in a lot of other places, we have a lot of Russians who are hell-bent on spreading propaganda. But thanks to the Spanish laws and the activity of Ukrainian community, a lot of them are being put in check of what they're doing. And this is also one of those very empowering things, because like when the group shares that there's this person or that person that is spreading false news and propaganda, people take measures, and not just, you know, go and report them to Facebook, but if there is being a harassment on the street or anything like that, people go and report this to police. So because Spain has very strict laws on harassment, on hate speech, and so on. So people are on it. And this is also very empowering and helps to keep us all safe.
I wish to be with us a bit earlier, because that's, aren't you, you know, Valeria, you were harassed in Spain as a Ukrainian, yeah. And I told you, like, please call their police, because this is a, can you share that if you don't mind?
Yeah, I was, I was sitting outside with a friend of mine, and there were two ladies sitting next to us, and I started speaking on the phone to my dad, and I actually, I'm also interesting situation, because I usually speak to my dad in Russian, but this one time I decided to speak to my dad in Ukrainian. And then these two ladies next to me started blasting Первый канал, like recordings of the government channel, the main propaganda channel, like really loud next to me so that I would hear it. And then when I put the phone down with my dad, they started being like, oh, it's all because of Zelensky, Zelensky this, Zelensky that, like, you know, doing it so that I would notice. And I was trying to, and Maxim was like, yeah, call the police, basically. Call the police. Don't wait for other actions, but call the police. So, but I guess this happens everywhere, right? It's not like Spain or somewhere else. I think when I posted about it on Twitter the same day, loads of people shared similar situations that have been happening to them. But it's good to hear what you're saying, that actually the law enforcement, and not only, but just in general, government have been helping with like limiting some of that activity. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
That's crazy. Okay, so we also, one of the cool things about being Patreon Ukrainian Spaces patron that you get to ask our guests and featured Ukrainians your questions. And I have one question from our patron, Ashley. She's here listening to us as well. So she's asking something that you actually, Rusanna, mentioned earlier, reaching out to people and ask about help. That's something we do nonstop 24/7. But she asks, how do you deal with the vulnerability of asking for help to keep pushing forward? Because I find that this is a very important question, because, you know, nobody likes to beg. But at the same time, we understand how it's important to keep asking people for solidarity and help, because no way we can withstand on our own and deal with this on our own. So in your case, how do you deal with it? And is it an issue for you even?
Yes. I'm an introvert, so it's a massive issue for me personally. So I am in a very privileged position in which most of the asking is on the shoulders of my partner. He's really good at it, and I love and appreciate him for doing that. If I have to ask, I mostly deal in like a personalized approach. I reach out to people directly and ask them for what they can give us. My approach is that this is long term. My approach was that this is going to be a long term project from day one. So I was pacing myself, and I was pacing our requests for everybody, telling them that I will appreciate the help that you can give. I don't want you to burn out too early, so please give us what you can. Keeping in mind that I might come back to you again and ask for something more later at a later time. So my approach was in, this is a marathon, not a race. Please help me in a way that is sustainable for you. And this works really well so far at a scale that we are, I'm not even pretending to speak about, you know, bigger scales and grand things, but at the scale that we are, this works really well because people help us with what they can. If they can bring us food once a week, we are grateful. If they can give us money once a month or just one lump amount, we take that and we understand, can we come back to you or should we move on, and you will let us know if we can get help another time. But this is pretty much what it is. But now we are setting up a fundraising team. We have a few very enthusiastic individuals who have more experience in doing fundraising. So they're beaming with ideas, and they are planning a few more things to reach out to wider audiences. And those will be like, okay, we started a campaign, we made a poster, we put something on Facebook. So this will be less personalized and more like oriented on a broader audience of people. We'll see how that goes, because that's in the works right now.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Well, I think, I mean, I'm still kind of a bit under impression of the things that you shared a bit earlier about how you feel about Ukraine and what keeps you going and motivated, and you know, despite everything that is happening, despite the exhaustion, of course, and burnout that we all experience. But it kind of leads me to one of our key and favorite questions about what it means for us to feel and be Ukrainian these days, and wanted to ask you, like, has it changed for you in recent 3 months in any way because of your of you living abroad for so many years, of you being queer and a person of color and also Ukrainian? This is something that, well, I can relate probably on a queer level. This is not something that would be always very easy to marry. With being Ukrainian, at least a long time ago, many years before, especially when I left. But it has changed for me, definitely. It's such a natural mix now. But what's been for you, if you don't mind sharing?
Oof. Honestly, it's a question that I keep on thinking every now and again. I'm coming back to it. And like I did a DNA test a few years back, and the result, I knew that I have a lot of stuff mixed in. And the most disappointing part for me was that I am genetically 4% Ukrainian. I was like, I expected it to be at least 20%. 4% is very sad. I'm apparently British more than I'm Ukrainian. But my heart and my brain and every fiber of my being is 100% Ukrainian. You can't tell me otherwise. This is who I am and how I feel. And for the last 3 months, this is the flame of it has been burning with such passion and fury that it's a little overwhelming and confusing, to a point where I'm all of a sudden planting tomatoes and cucumbers, and I can't plan for anything. I can't keep a tree alive. And here I am. I'm like, yes, I'm going to plant this and I'm going to make this work because this is somewhere deep in my roots. This is somewhere deep in my heart. And this is what I'm doing because this is who I am. I'm not sure how that's going to go, but
that is hilarious and genius. And I am in awe of you for doing that, because I also wanted to ask you to explain to people why that's a very Ukrainian thing to do.
I mean, my grandparents had a plot of land, I don't know, like 2 square meters by 3 square meters. And my whole life, they were growing everything there. This is what we do as a nation. We grow food. This is why our farmers are wearing body armor and going to sow. This is literally what we do. We grow food and we feed everybody around us. I cannot feed much people, but I am definitely feeling this need to at least grow food and hope that something comes out of it. And yeah, I'm like, I don't know. I'm still processing this fire that got ignited, but it's there and it's very intense.
I mean, I was raised on the farm, and of course I grow stuff on my terrace in the city. I grow sunflowers this year because, God, I pray every day they bloom, because for me, I feel like this is going to be on a small level an ultimate fuck you to the invaders if they bloom. But also, I'm almost like crying listen to you, because it's something that foreigners do not understand. When I see how they store, how they stealing our grain and food and our beautiful vegetables and our, you know, the stuff that we grow and put so much effort to it, and especially on territories where I come from that are occupied, it breaks so much heart, my heart so much every time seeing those trucks, you know, stealing it and they go towards Russia. And I don't think that foreigners understand what a heartbreak it is for a regular Ukrainian, just an insult to see that. Notwithstanding that, of course, it raises 100,000 of all red flags that we have in us on genetic level because of the genocide and famine that our generation, couple of generations before, survived. So yeah, thank you so much. I think this is important to for everyone to understand as well, and to kind of get an idea why it's important for us, extra important.
And I need to step up my game. I realized since both of you are planting and growing something, I need to as well. I think that's my Friday night plans. But I also wanted to ask you, I know we've been talking a lot about your center, and I guess I just wanted to ask if there's anything we can do to support your work and the work of the people that you are volunteering together with and doing all this stuff together with, our audiences or just in general. What can we do to support you guys?
If anybody felt moved and willing to donate us as much as even 1 euro, we will be extremely grateful. We are very easy to find on Facebook. That's the only like presence that we have online. It's called Palenica Valencia. I will post a donation link. It's very easy. Like, you can make it with a card or a bank transfer if you are somewhere in Europe. And that we will be extremely grateful for that, because literally every penny that we get goes to the center. Nobody gets salaries. Nobody gets compensated for fuel or anything like that. We get money, we go shop, and we bring it to the center and give it out to people.
Okay, one thing left is Slava Ukraini.
Героям слава. And thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.